Hey, how's it going? Welcome back to the Football Diary podcast. More surprises in the Premier League this week and some brilliant games to discuss, including the enigma that is Manchester United at the minute, coming back from behind to beat Forest. And West Ham's great start to the season. They beat Brighton away 3-1, which is, you know, not an easy result to achieve. But we'll start us at James's Park for an absolutely cracking game between Newcastle and Liverpool, which finished 2-1 to the 10-man Reds, which obviously on its own is an incredible result, but kind of wasn't made very difficult for them, was it, Miles? Newcastle shot themselves in the foot in a few ways despite having the man advantage. So how did Liverpool come around to this amazing comeback, and what part did Newcastle play in that?
Yeah, it's interesting because we talk about St James's Park as a bit of a fortress these days, and we saw what Newcastle did to Villa on the opening day of the season. We know that this is a hard place to go, but Liverpool seemed to have their number last year. And this was a golden opportunity for Newcastle to rectify that, particularly when the red card is so early in the game and they're already 1-0 up at this point. But from there, there were so many chances that Newcastle had that they just weren't clinical enough with. Like, I think Almiron hit the post and the crossbar, and Harvey Barnes broke through and didn't square the ball when it was really clear what he needed to do. And they were just missing that kind of basic instinct in front of goal that, weirdly, Darwin Nunes showcased in the second half. Not something we're used to really saying with Nunes, that he was clinical, but he absolutely was. He obviously is going to find his chances a bit more limited at Liverpool this season because they've got so many attacking players now in those positions, and he's found himself on the bench every game. Obviously, the week that I took him out of my fantasy league, he came on, scored twice. So it's good for him that he's had that cameo and managed to make the most of it, because otherwise you were struggling to see how we got into the Liverpool team.
Yeah, we'll start with Newcastle, I think, first of all, because like you say, they were fairly wasteful, and throughout the game they had 23 shots. I mean, it's always going to be a lot of chances when you're playing against 10 men, but they didn't take many off them. And like you say, that wastefulness is a concern for Eddie Howe, isn't it? Do they need any other signings in this window, do you think, Newcastle? Because so far they've lost the last two games now out of the three they've played so far. I know there's no reason to ring the alarm bell yet, but it does feel like there's something still missing, and I can't decide whether it is another person, another player in that team, or whether it's just a little bit of naivety in games like this that's letting them down.
I think it's probably the latter, to be honest, because I think they've openly said they're not looking for anyone else in the transfer market, and they're not trying to overdo it and have like a complete overhaul since this money's come in. And I think that's probably a smarter way of recruiting. I think the only adjustment they might look at is apparently Botman picked up an injury in this game that might force their hand in the window. But other than that, I don't necessarily think that there's anything to worry about, really. It's funny because there was like mass hysteria when they spanked Villa from Villa fans, and Villa now find themselves above them in the league. But I don't take much into that when you consider that so far they've played Villa, City and Liverpool. That's a very hard start to the season. And we've seen the best of Newcastle in that time. We just didn't see the best of them in this game. I actually thought they played really well against Man City at times as well. But yeah, I think once they find that clinical edge, it'll make a big difference for them. I do think they could upgrade a few players, of course. I think as well as Almiron played last season and that little burst of form he had, I don't think he's the finished product. I don't think he's someone that will elevate Newcastle to being a successful Premier League club. I think they probably need to adjust that area, but I don't think they will now. I think they'll give it another year, to be totally honest. Yeah. I think while they let Isak have his first full season without injury, hopefully Harvey Barnes will come in and out of the team, Anthony Gordon's finding his form, they've got attacking players, so I don't think there'll be too much adjustment.
Let's shed some light on something that I don't really like complimenting too much, and neither do you really, and that's Liverpool. And maybe sort of complimenting them on the way they did come back into the game, because it was unlikely for a while, wasn't it? But that substitution of Nunes made all the difference, and he was the clinical edge that the Newcastle seemed to need as well. So fair play to him. But it could have been so much different, couldn't it? The red card at the start of the game, and also what was near the start, wasn't it? And also the potential red card for Trent Alexander-Arnold that was overlooked. Mm. So they rode their luck quite a bit, didn't they?
Yeah, I think so. But you have to in games like this. And to be honest, like we said, I think Liverpool might have been the only team to win at St James's Park last year, or maybe Arsenal as well. But it was... that's what you need in games like this, particularly when you find yourselves at that disadvantage in such an early stage. And they just kept themselves in the game That's the main thing. Right until the end, they were in the game. And then the fact they were able to capitalize on that is fantastic for them. They've got a wealth of attacking talent. We know that. And it gives defenses a lot to try and process if that's changing at those stages. Because when you've been dealing with the likes of Jota or Gakpo or Salah for a whole game, and then you've got someone like Nunes to come off the bench who is just going to run at you. He's just a menace, isn't he? He's going to cause you problems defensively. And he found those pockets and the both balls through to him. The first one, obviously, defender makes a meal of it and he manages to capitalize. But the second one's a perfect pass. And the finishes are nearly identical. So it's clearly something he's worked on going across the keeper, because how many times have we seen Nunes squander chances like that? It was fantastic from him.
I don't think anybody doubts that Liverpool are a very potent attacking threat, but defensively, same issues, isn't it, in some ways?
Yeah.
And I think Trent was very lucky to still be on the pitch. I really do.
Yeah.
Just because it's early, I don't think it means you should hold back on giving them a card, because if that was the first offence, he would have got a yellow for it. Because it was so early in the game, I think he was reluctant to change the shape of it, which I do understand to an extent. But I mean, Newcastle, I've got every right to feel like that. That's a missed opportunity for them to kind of push on further. And obviously the Van Dijk situation as well. I don't know what it is with penalty situations and sending offs this weekend, where we'll talk about another one later with the United game, but fans seem to be getting in hysterics about the decision when I'm looking at it thinking that's clean cut. Van Dijk deserved to go, didn't he? He came across the player before he took the ball.
Yeah, I could not understand what the argument was, because he was absolutely furious, Van Dijk. And actually, he's risking getting a further ban now for dissent, because it was ridiculous.
I think he will.
He was the last man. Isak had rolled him. Ball had gone through. Like, that's a denial of a clear goal-scoring opportunity. He's through one goal and you've taken him out as the last man. I couldn't see any complaint, to be honest. Klopp does his normal Jurgen Klopp, where he fakes this outrage on the touchline, and Van Dijk's clearly picked that up. But as a captain, as a defender who we're used to being at the absolute elite level and making the right decisions, I thought it was a really poor showing. And we've seen a slight decline in Van Dijk over the last season, perhaps. And that challenge, I think Neville said it on commentary, he just never would have made that 12 months ago. But he just lost his place. No, he just couldn't keep up with it, Sack. And yeah, I thought it was a very clear red card. And defensively, Liverpool still have issues. It looks like they're going into the last few days of the window. I really feel like they need another centre-back as well, particularly when now that Van Dijk's injured, I think it looks like it's going to be Joe Gomez and Matip against Villa at the weekend. I'll take that all day, to be honest. And Trent, as much as he's progressed well further up the pitch, as we always say with him, it's the same conversation. Defensively, let them down in this game for the goal as well, just by being complacent and not being aware of the players around him. So they definitely need to address that defensive position. I don't think Endo made a huge difference in this game really either as that holding midfielder. So I wouldn't be surprised to see Liverpool dip back into the market. It'd be whether or not they do so with the Salah money, if that happens. That's the only thing I'd be worried about really.
Yeah. So I think Newcastle and Liverpool both won't react too much to this result and take too much from it or get too carried away with losing or winning. But one team that I'm not sure will feel any more differently to that from their result this weekend is West Ham, because on the back of beating Chelsea, they beat Brighton away, which is a really tricky place to go, really tricky team to set up against. And the way that they did set up against Brighton was tailor-made to beat them, wasn't it? They took about 20% of the ball throughout the game, so the possession stats were really low. But the way they countered and hit Brighton where it hurt was fantastic, wasn't it? And we'll talk about their coming signings in a moment, but the game itself, they couldn't have played any better, really, could they, against Brighton?
No, absolutely. And it's interesting because when you're a club that's been so built around one particular player and that player moves on, it's really important that you rebuild quickly but successfully. I've seen it obviously firsthand from a Villa point of view. West Ham seem to have really addressed their midfield well. So without Declan Rice in there, Edson Alvarez and James Ward-Prowse have slotted in perfectly. And it's really interesting to see this David Moyes iteration of West Ham, because he dug his heels in. He said that he wanted more of a say on the recruitment. And I'll be honest, I'll hold my hands up and say I didn't think Ward-Prowse was the kind of player that West Ham should be looking for. I've never really understood him on the pitch. And he's been fantastic these first few games. He's clearly earned the shirt and he's loving his time there so far, and he's linking up really well with a lot of the existing players there and the talent. That's exactly what Moyes will have wanted for him. So yeah, their counter-attacking was excellent, but it just seems so easy for Mikel Antonio to find space and bully the defenders. And it's no surprise that at the start of last season, West Ham's form was poor and Jarrod Bowen's form was really poor. And then as Jarrod Bowen's form picked up, so did theirs. And he started the season really sharp as well. So that's really helpful for them. They've got some excellent players, West Ham, let's not forget. This is the team that qualified for the Europa League naturally in the league a couple of years ago and then went very far in that competition. And they're back in it this year. It's a good squad. It's a really good squad. And I think that they could do pretty well this year. I think I had them quite high on my league predictions because I just feel like David Moyes had another year with that squad now. And I'm quite glad that he's got his way with them.
Yeah, I think it's one of those things where I really can't put my finger on what to expect from Moyes or West Ham because of, like you say, the European commitments. They will obviously aim to go far in Europe again this season because they can. They've got a squad to do that. And not many in Europe have a squad as talented as West Ham's. So I always question where they prioritise the league. Have they got a squad deep enough? And he does still put a lot of faith in some players that don't let him down. And this game was no exception. Bowen, like you say, was exceptional. Antonio is perfectly suited to the counter-attacking game. And I think that's kind of where Scamacca was not really the right fit for West Ham last season because he didn't like to run through the channels, did he? So Antonio is perfect for that. But what if one of them is injured is the question. Now, they've just signed Mo Kudus as well from Ajax, which fills me with excitement because he's such an exciting player and he's scored loads of goals for Ajax so far in the Eredivisie. So looks like a really entertaining joker in the pack for them. But the question is, will he fit into a very trusted David Moyes first 11? And will he take them to another level? Because like you say, they feel like they're on the verge of taking the team into maybe the top eight or something like that. But they could easily finish 14th as well, couldn't they? It's a real enigma at the minute, West Ham. Does Kudus help them?
He definitely helps them because he's a phenomenal footballer, like you say. But I do wonder where he gets into the team because there are two roles he could kind of occupy. He could play in central midfield, but what that would mean is probably taking Thomas Suchek out, who brings you a lot of defensive capabilities. So then you probably have to drop Ward-Prowse slightly deeper. And actually, Ward-Prowse has looked really good going forward so far for West Ham. So that's a bit of a conundrum. Or I actually think Kudus was brought in to kind of be Paqueta's replacement. And now it looks like Paqueta's not going. So when you've kind of got Paqueta and Bowen occupying the roles behind the striker, that's where Kudus would like to operate. So you're going to have to play him as like a number eight. But then is he going to do the defensive doggies that David Moyes will need? He's an excellent player. He's such a good player. But I wonder if this is one of the ones where the famous feud of the sporting director and manager, the sporting director's got his way because it doesn't look like someone who's going to fit naturally into a Moyes system. But I have no doubt that as soon as he gets in there, he'll be phenomenal because he's a very talented footballer.
So what are your kind of expectations for West Ham then in the league, especially? Are you still kind of sticking with around 10th place, like mid-table? Do you think that's kind of the realistic aim for them?
I think so, yeah. I think if they got the top half finish after last season, they'd be really pleased with that, particularly considering they're already in the Europa League this year as well. And we know that they'll enjoy a cup run because they did last year and the year before. David Moyes will go for that, absolutely. I think the competition at the top end of the league is so tight this year because you've got the traditional top four or last season's top four. You've got Liverpool trying to get back into it. You've got Chelsea trying to get back into it. You've got Spurs who look a much improved team. We've got Villa and Newcastle hanging around, Brighton. So it's a really difficult league to cement one of the top eight or nine places all of a sudden. But West Ham will definitely be in the conversation come the end of the season or at least just underneath it.
I don't think they're actually done in the transfer market either from what I hear. I think they're still looking to reinforce the forward positions, especially. I think Youssef En-Nesyri has been linked. I think that would be a good stylistic fit.
Yeah, definitely. And actually, Maguire as well again. Apparently, they've gone back in for Maguire, but on loan this time, which is an interesting one.
He wants to keep his United wages, that's the thing. I think that's not fair on United, really, from Maguire's point of view. Yeah, he just needs to go out on a permanent move for United's best interest, really. Actually, it's a good segue into United now, actually.
Who cares whether it's fair or United? They signed a contract with him. It's perfectly fair on them because they made a poor decision of extending his contract and giving him that much money. If I'm Harry Maguire, that's what I'm owed. I've signed a contract offering me that much.
Well, I think his career's going to stall if he stays, though. I think he just needs to go for his own best interests as well. I think if he stays at United, he won't play for England.
Yeah, I think the loan is probably a perfect result for him then, isn't it? Because he will get that money still, but he'll play every week. And I think he'll do very well at West Ham. It's a perfect club for him.
Yeah. Let's move on to United's performance against Forest as well. So it was a 3-2 win, but after 5 minutes, it didn't look like that might be the way the game was going to go. I think it's an understatement really to say that. 2-0 down within the first 5 minutes. And the soft centre of United was so obvious to see. I think the first goal, especially when United were hit on the counter from a set piece and Rashford was the last man trying to mark a 1-2 for the first goal. And he's got no hope. I don't know what we're doing in training to try and set up that way and what Ten Hag's thinking, or whether that's Ten Hag's instruction to go that advanced for all his defensive players at a set play. But we were exposed badly within 5 minutes, United, weren't we? So what happened and why is that the case? Why are United looking so sluggish at the minute? Because it is weird watching them play. Every game feels like you don't know what to expect. And when I'm looking at them at the minute and thinking, when we play the likes of City or Liverpool in the form they're in, we'll get ripped to pieces, won't we, based on this evidence?
Yeah, the good thing, I suppose, is that despite that slow start, you did come away with 3 points. And I think that's the thing that Ten Hag will try and take from it. I do wonder, there's been a lot made of Ten Hag's pre-seasons and how exhaustive they can be. Yeah. And actually, this happened last year as well. You started the season really poorly, but picked up straight away, it felt like. So there's still a lot clicking into gear for Man United. They're basically trying to bed in a new midfield. Obviously, in this game, they had last season's midfield back together because Mount's now out injured. Mm. And they still looked a bit hollow in the middle, and it was too easy for Forrest to cut through them early on, particularly. But the midfield did step up. I think all three of them scored, didn't they? So that is what you want to see. Putting Rashford back out on the left brings the best out in him, absolutely. But defensively, yeah, I think Casemiro needs some support. We kind of talked about that in the first couple of games as well, that he was kind of shielding the defence on his own, and he just doesn't look as fit as he did last year. So given time in the season, I'm sure he'll get that fitness back. Sorry.
Sorry. With United, though, I think watching this game and seeing the way they did come back, they had to, really. The halftime team talk must have been quite an intense one from Ten Hag, and it needed to be. So I think from my point of view, I'm reassured that we didn't let the game slip away at 2-0, because there were other games last season where that did happen, especially at the start of the season. So there's credit there. Bruno Fernandes, I thought, had a fantastic game. He really played the captain's part. So that was a big plus. But I'm really concerned about our forward line still. Anthony Martial is not a very good striker, and he shouldn't be at United anymore. There's no sign of United actually signing a number nine before the window closes. In fact, some of the players that are being spoken about are to cover Luke Shaw, Cucurella, Marcos Alonso, Reguilón from Spurs. They all feel like other teams' cast-offs. So it feels like Ighalo and Weghorst Mark II. What is going on with United at the minute? Is this literally a symptom of the way the takeover is playing out or not playing out so far, as the case may be?
It must be, because although we've seen some activity from them in this window, and I think you'd praise some of the business that they've done, the reluctance to go out and get yourself to the next level is massive. It seems like you're only refreshing things when you really need to. Like, you needed a new goalkeeper, so you got a goalkeeper. Eriksen's a bit older, so you had to go and sign someone else, so you've got Mount in. Whereas if you want to improve, it can't just be paper in the cracks. It needs to be, right, now what can we add to this? And they have perfect opportunities in this market. You can see some of the players that have moved around the Premier League and think, wouldn't United have been a perfect club for him? Someone like Alexis McAllister went to Liverpool for a pretty humble fee, really, would have been perfect for Man United. Some of the forwards that are moving around now, United, if they'd acted quicker, could have got in. And now this left-back situation is, again, it's a needs must, but they've got no money in the budget to bring anyone substantial in. And actually, do they need to bring anyone substantial in? Because Luke Shaw will come back and be first choice, absolutely. What happened to Malacia? Is Malacia injured? Have I missed something?
He's injured at the minute, yeah. I think at the minute we're trying put Dalot as a left back just to cover that for the time being. And to be honest, he does play the role pretty well as an inverted wing back. And I think, but to be honest, defensively, I'd be more comfortable with that. Yeah, I'd be more comfortable with that than drafting in some of the names that have been mentioned. And like you say, it's just smacks of poor planning and not really looking at the bigger picture and thinking, you know, do we need this? We were left with very few options in January last time around, and we got Weghorst in very late, and that was the same situation. I don't want to be doing that again with like a week to go. Yeah. That's what worries me.
I don't think you'll get another forward in. I think they're waiting for Hoyland. I can't see United going in for another striker now, because too many have gone in the market that would have been the right profile for United and they've not moved. So I don't see, there is no one for them now. So Hoyland will be the guy. And that could work out very well. And actually, if you manage to get Cucurella from Chelsea, if you got Brighton's Cucurella, that's a really good signing. I think he'd play really well under Ten Hag, but we just don't know what level he's at. But it's very reactionary in this market. And for a club the size of Man United, it's bizarre. Like you say, them looking at the cast-offs from a Barcelona team that were desperate to get rid of players, Tottenham, who obviously they've moved on in those positions. It's not where United want to find themselves. They want to be going out and finding the best talent across the world and using them to bolster their own plans, not a reactionary panic. I don't know. I find it bizarre, but there were positives. I do think there were positives from this game. Like you say, Bruno, for all the criticism that neutrals will give him for being gobby, he's a perfect captain this season, and he's leading by example in a lot of ways. So I've actually thought that despite United's midfield issues, he's been your best player in every game so far, because he just looks like he's willing to do whatever he needs to for the team. And that's the perfect kind of player that Man United need as a captain. So that's a real positive. Rashford looks a lot sharper off the left, obviously won the penalty, which I'm sure you want to talk about. That's a massive a bonus for United as well. So there are things to take from it. It just needs some time to settle, doesn't it?
Yeah, Rashford on the left is a different player altogether. And we were talking last week about how almost disinterested he looks playing through the middle, because I feel like his game changes far too much if he's playing that direct. When he goes out on the left and cuts back in again, he invites fouls. And that's what he did in this particular occasion. Danilo's foul, it was a foul, you know, I don't think any angle makes it look any better for me, was the winning penalty. So I think when he gets himself into those positions, it will only end in him creating a chance or winning a penalty, it feels like. So we've got to keep Rashford on the left. But on the right, we had Anthony playing there, and I feel like he had one of his better games, which is not saying much. He's flat to deceive quite a lot since he joined. But he did look a threat. It's just missing end product. So again, it feels like once confidence starts to come, once the ball hits the back of the net instead of going wide or hitting the post, Anthony will feel a lot better. But it does make me wonder where we play the likes of Garnacho, because he's had a chance and then been brought out again. And also Martial, has he got a future at the club? So how we kind of make that front line work, even with Hoyland or without Hoyland, is a bit of a conundrum, isn't it?
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised to see someone leave the club before the end of the window as well. I think most likely Jadon Sancho, because he came off the bench for the last half an hour in this game, but isn't starting. And if you're now behind Rashford, Anthony, even Martial, what's his future? He's got to be looking for a move now, surely. So it's an interesting one with United's forward line. There are players there with a lot of potential, and they could be Man United's forward line for the next 10 years, nearly. That's a massive plus for a Ten Hag system. They'll develop, they will get better. You need it now, though, a little bit, it feels like. And I'm not sure what United's season looks like. At the start of the season, I was really optimistic for them. But watching them in these early exchanges, there's a lot of work to be done. And then seeing their intention in the market, I think it's hard. I think the other thing that might come to bite Man United is this constant discussion of contentious decisions going in the favour of Man United. Does that start to apply pressure to referees? Do away fans start to get on Man United's back a bit more and that sway games a little bit? I didn't think this was a contentious decision, to be honest. I might be completely wrong, but the amount of people I've seen say, never a penalty. He's made a late challenge in the box. He's not got the ball. That's a penalty all day to me. I don't really understand.
With pretty clear contact as well. At every angle I've seen, even the ones trying to defend the fact that, you know, shouldn't have been a foul and saying it was a dive, you can still see contact. So I don't understand.
Rashford makes the most of it.
Statistically.
Doesn't it? He makes the most of it.
The way he's moving, any contact is going to knock him off some kind of balance. And it did. But yeah, he felt that contact and made the most of it, like you said. But there was contact and the ball had long gone. So Why that's a contentious decision, I don't know. And you talk about United getting decisions. I think I saw on social media, obviously, a league table of teams that have had the most kind of fouls or decisions gone against them. And United were in like the bottom five teams that have had decisions, penalty decisions especially, go their way. So I think that's a myth as well. But
absolutely,
it's clickbaity. It gets headlines, yeah. And United do get headlines for whatever reason. So, you know, hated, adored, and never ignored still. At least we're up there.
But the problem is, we've seen quite publicly lately referees come out and talk about things that influence their decisions in games. And I wonder if the more pressure that is piled on being really attentive to what happens in a Manchester United game, does that start to go against United a little bit as the season goes on? Our referee is going to be swayed to think, no, I need to be more critical at this because there'll be a social media storm if I give something in the favour of Man United, which is a bizarre way of thinking of it. But that's where our refereeing standards are right now, it feels like.
Thing is, though, I'm not particularly partisan about it either. I won't defend my team come what may. And I've had a lot of fans come at me saying, well, if that's a penalty, then, you know, Onana should have got given a penalty against him, against Wolves. And I'm like, he should have done.
Yeah, he should have.
Know, if there's contact in the box that doesn't benefit the team or it's foul, clear foul anywhere else on the pitch, it's a penalty. So, no arguments for me there. But moving on from United, should we talk about Villa quickly? Because I want to just get your take on Moussa Diaby now. We keep complimenting him, but he's my new favourite Villa player. He's fantastic, isn't he?
Yeah, he's absolutely brilliant. He's just lightning quick. In this game, he was clinical as well, and he's very unselfish for a forward. That's what I've really noticed. He's always looking for a teammate. I think in this game, he had like an 88% pass completion rate. He was incredibly successful with all his dribbles and his take-ons. His finish was excellent, I thought. And he's just, he wants to be involved in all our attacking play, and that's really positive, but he's not the only positive. And that's the nice thing for Villa. It feels like for a long time when we were in the Premier League, there was either one player or like someone in a rich vein of form to focus on. So like at the end of last season, it was all about Ollie Watkins. The season before or the year before even, it was all about Grealish. And then back in the day, it was Benteke. Whereas now there's so much talent across that Villa squad. You can see why they're elevated into a different position. It's super. There are a couple of players in this game in particular that just absolutely shone.
Yeah, beating Burnley 3-1. Obviously, it was a result that you'd expect Villa to win that game, but Burnley are still a bit of an unknown quantity. But to see, as you say, the other players come to the fore, Matty Cash getting a brace. He actually had a really superb good game, didn't he, down
that flank? Yeah, he did. And it's nice because I wondered what the space was for Matty Cash this season, because obviously he had a lung injury at the end of last season, so Emery kind of had to work without him for a while. And Ashley Young filled that gap as quite a defensive right back. And Matty Cash is a very attacking kind of footballer. He played on the wing for Forest quite often when he was younger as well. So you know that that's where the space he wants to occupy. And with Emery kind of favouring attacking down the left with the likes of Luca Dean and Alex Moreno, I wonder what Matty Cash's space was going to be. But that's not the first time we've seen him in a more advanced role. But quite often it's 60 minutes into a game, when Emery wants to change things around, he moves Cash further forward. Now, in this game, we tried a completely different defensive setup. We kind of had a back three and two wing backs, which I've not seen us do yet, really. I have both of them attacking, but Luca Dean and Cash just bombed forward constantly. And Konsa kind of played that right back role a lot more, and he found himself up the pitch a lot more. And he carries the ball incredibly well, Konsa. I think his performances have been really underrated. Particularly as he's kind of taken over as the defensive leader in that team now that Mings isn't there. He still needs to work on his progressive passing. I notice a lot of the time when he gets the ball in those attacking positions, he's happy to take a defender on, but then will pass backwards. He's not looking for that killer ball. Yeah. But that killer ball was coming from all over the pitch in this game, particularly McGinn. McGinn's passing range. He's called McGinniesta for a reason. He was superb in this game. He was always looking to the channel, was always looking for the ball through. At one point, I think for Diaby's goal, he's being held back completely and fouled, and the advantage is played, and he somehow still managed to unleash an inch-perfect ball to Luca Dean. It was superb. The whole midfield was excellent. Boubacar Kamara had one of his best games in a Villa shirt, and this comes off the back of spanking Hibs in the Conference League, which was brilliant to watch, I'll be honest.
Well, that's what I mean. I feel like we'll see more of this sort of almost back three with wing backs more often, because the balance in midfield is so right that, you know, Kamara and Douglas Luiz both shield that defence pretty nicely to enable Diaby obviously to run free, but also, like you say, McGinn has found that edge to his game as well to get forward, and he's got the confidence to do that with that setup behind him. And Burnley didn't know how to deal with not only them, but also, yeah, like you say, down the flanks, there was a threat. Every time Villa went forward, it looked like they could score. And obviously against Hibs, they pretty much did that. Every attack against Hibs was a goal almost, wasn't it? So it's a really like positive thing to see Villa looking at scoring from more sources than just Ollie Watkins. That's got to be encouraging for you to see.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's still more options coming in. Zaniolo came off the bench. I thought he looked really, really sharp. And he kind of, he had his little moment that gave the Villa fans some joy, where he nutmegs a player and then puts a no-look pass through to Matty Cash. And that's the kind of flair that Villa really wanted to see, because they were passing the ball around so nicely in this game. I think if you look at Cash's second goal, I think there's a 22-pass build-up. And it's just superb. Like every pass is inch perfect. The players on the ball just look so calm and assured. And that's what Emery's given them. It's funny because I think back to when we took Emery on, a lot of Arsenal fans would have said, oh yeah, but the football's boring. He sets up like a cup manager. He's really defensive. He'll take a 1-0. Well, we've just won our last three games and scored 12 goals in them. So it's not been boring, I'll tell you that much. I think I'm interested to see what happens at the weekend, because so far we've had a humbling defeat to Newcastle, and then we've played probably the worst team in the league, if not one of the worst three, in Everton. Then we went to Hibs, and let's be honest, that was never going to be much of a competition. Lee Johnson's been sacked since then, which is quite funny for me to see, because he's a petty little man. And then obviously we go to a newly promoted Burnley. So when we have a bit more of a stern test, depends how we hold up against them. We've got Liverpool at the weekend without Van Dijk. Who knows? I'd like to see us still go for that game in the same manner that we have the last three, because when we move the ball around, I'd like to test Liverpool's new midfield and see how well they could keep up with the likes of Kamara, Luiz and McGinn, because it seems made for us. It seems the right time for us to play Liverpool.
Well, it's frustrating because I feel like it's the right time to play Newcastle as well now. I think if you'd have played them now instead of at the start of the season, you'd have had a different result. So who knows? But yeah, the way the team's playing in the minute, I don't even know how you can see the likes of Zaniolo and Tielemans getting into that midfield at the minute. It's performing brilliantly and the balance is just about right. Would you try and shoehorn them in somewhere, or would you just make them play for their place and the competition, let's just see it as a good thing?
Yeah, Villa have seen already how quickly an injury can change your plans, because we probably didn't expect Diego Carlos to be starting this many games, but he's taken his chance. I thought he played really, really well in this game as well. He looks so strong, so assured. He read the game incredibly well. So you never know with the likes of Tielemans, whether if, hopefully not, but if there was an injury to any of those midfielders, Tielemans is the kind of player who could fill any of the gaps and play that role perfectly. So that really encourages me. And it is a long season. We're only just getting started. Obviously, we're looking to go deep in Europe. We've basically qualified now. We can all say we've got one more game to play with Hibs, but if they win 6-0, I'll eat my hat. So Tielemans will have space to play. Zaniolo, I think, eventually takes Matty Cash's role, if I'm honest. I can't see Cash continuing the whole season on the right-hand side in an attacking way, which is a shame for him because he was excellent in this game. But that was the only thing with Zaniolo when he came on. It didn't really seem like he came on in any position. He was kind of allowed to just float, and he kind of got in the way a little bit at times, or someone else got in his way and he didn't really know which ball to play because he found himself in these kind of half spaces. I'm interested to see what he's like when he's fully integrated and has his own role in the team, but he has to start every game when he comes in because he's a special talent.
I love talking to you about Villa at the minute until we play, that you play United, obviously, because I'm not hopeful for that game. But yeah, it's good to see a smile on your face. I think Villa fans collectively are really optimistic, and that's rare. I think even at the height of the Emery run at the end of last season, there's always that nagging doubt, isn't there? But I think the signings that you've made and the form so far, so much reason for optimism. Must be wicked. What does it feel like? Let me know.
It's phenomenal because it feels like the journey that Villa have been on over the last 5-6 years is reaching its peak almost. And I don't think it's going to be short-lived. I think to not that long ago when we were in the Premier League under Paul Lambert, and it was the most embarrassing time to be a Villa fan. And people would go, oh, who do you support? You'd say Villa. And they'd go, oh dear, why? boring. Whereas right now, you tell someone that you're a Villa fan and everyone goes, oh, you look great at the moment. It's nice to see. And that's been a long process. The new owners have given us a lot of joy. Dean Smith laid the groundwork. Gerard tried to rip it down, but Emery's back here with a wide range of builders to get it back to looking pristine. And that's an amazing thing to see. And actually, the squad of players we've got is incredibly likable as well. I feel behind every single one of them, really. That was a big Dean Smith thing. He really addressed the culture of the squad, because for the longest time, Villa was somewhere that people went for a payday and didn't really invest in the team. Dean Smith, kind of being who he was, got a lot of people on board with the Villa project. And Emery being a master coach, people want to play for him now. So we've got a really successful culture around that means a lot to all of the fans, to be honest. It's fantastic. Yeah. The sky's the limit. And that's the first time I've been able to say that as a Villa fan, probably in my lifetime.
Yeah. Well, we'll hold back talk of a title push just yet. We'll talk about the two teams quickly before we leave that have been kind of earmarked to challenge for the title. Man City obviously beat Sheffield United in a really difficult game, but I think the way they tackled that really difficult defensive low block team was impressive. And I think Man City are clearly the best team in the league so far from what we've seen. They look great, don't they? But then Arsenal dropping points. Is it fair to say dropping points this early in the season against Fulham? Yeah. What did you make of the Arsenal performance?
I think, again, there was encouraging signs for Arsenal as well, actually, despite the fact that they didn't take all 3 points. Eddie Nketiah scoring off the bench is massive. It's something he struggled to do. I think Fabio Vieira got a lot of stick last year. He came on and changed the game. There are definite things to work out still. You've signed someone like Kai Havertz. You've got to find the right space for him to play in. I'm not sure they've found that yet. And I do think Ramsdale's got to be looking over his shoulder a little bit, because he was very suspect, wasn't he? That first goal, his positioning's all over the place. Now, all right, you don't expect Saka to give the ball away in that kind of position, but you've got to be prepared. When you've got someone with the quality of David Raya sat on the bench looking at you, Ramsdale's got to be perfect. Yeah. Otherwise, the thing is, I was talking to Dom the other day. Obviously, we did a little episode with recently, and he was saying that he feels like as soon as Raya gets one game, that's it. He'll just be in the team then. And I do agree with that. The quality that he's got, he won't drop his place. Ramsdale could, it feels like. So that's a bit of a worry. It was funny watching Fulham, because I feel like they're just desperate for the transfer window to close, because obviously they lost Mitrovic. Paulini has come back in. There'll be a lot of clubs eyeing him up, and I don't see a lot of Fulham business coming in now. I can't see them going out and strengthening a lot of areas. And they had such a successful season last year. Whether they can maintain that kind of form, it's going to be really, really hard for them. So this is an excellent point for them. It's a shame that Bassi got himself suspended for the next game, because I actually think he's a great signing as well. So yeah, a difficult test for Arsenal, one that they didn't quite answer as well as they probably would have last year. If this was last season, they would have won that game, it felt like. So they need to kick on quickly.
In the game. Well, the red card not really making a difference to the result either. It feels like red cards are having a counterproductive effect on the team that should benefit from them. And I feel like it galvanised Fulham to see the game out even more, didn't it?
Yeah, and that's the difference, isn't it? When Sheffield United equalised against Man City were really quick to respond and make sure that they took all three points. And that's going to be the difference come the end of the season. You say, is it too early to talk about dropping points? No, it can't be with Man City. You have to be on your A game for an entire season if you ever want a chance. Because we know that Man City tend to start slow and grow into a year. So you've got to start really fast. And City are kind of just picking up points as if it's nothing at the moment. I'm still not sure with City. I want to see them play some more teams before we say that they're going to walk it.
I feel like they're going to have a season where they do have these results that are ground out more, and they're not going to score a ton of goals. They're going to go, we'll just beat 1-0 and cruise to a win, which I think is more soul-destroying for competitors to see them do that. Do you know what I mean? It feels like it kills any spirit or hope that you've got to see them. You see a goal from Sheffield United, and it's almost like they've done it on purpose to go, get back in your lane, and they'll score another and win. It's it's hard to see. But with Arsenal, I just want to touch before we leave on Kai Havertz, because I've seen so many comments on not just the way he's performing so far this season, but whether he's good enough for Arsenal, good enough for the Premier League, where does he fit? I feel really sorry for him, because I think we all remember the Leverkusen Havertz, and he was such an amazing prospect for Germany. And I think joining Chelsea, I had high hopes for him until he got thrust into being a false nine. And in some ways, I feel like he's so young, but he spent the last 2 to 3 years playing in a position that he was adapting to. So it's almost like he doesn't know what his role is anymore. And obviously, he sank deeper into midfield this time around. And Odegaard is the one who creates the chances. And he did. He had the majority of the ball, majority of the touches for Arsenal this time around. That's his right. He's the captain, he's the star player. So Havertz had to take a back seat, really. And this is where I want to see the Leverkusen Havertz come in, because it's there. Arsenal can't quite find it from him yet. But there's a lot of impatience around him, isn't there? And his fee wasn't ridiculous. It wasn't like it was, you know, Mikhailo Mudryk level of, or Antony level of money. But why is he getting so much stick, do you think?
I don't know. You talked about him kind of playing in an unfamiliar position for Chelsea, and now it feels like he's doing that again. So we saw that take some time for him to learn at Stamford Bridge, and now he's got to learn something completely new. I don't know. Kai Havertz is obviously a phenomenal footballer. He's clearly fantastic. He shows that for Germany every time he goes to the international team. He showed it at Leverkusen. He showed it in moments at Chelsea. But I said at the time, I didn't understand it as an Arsenal signing, because I just didn't see where he... Not that he's not good enough for a club like Arsenal, but it's not the player they needed. And it was a lot of money to put out for someone to play out of position. If you're going to spend 70 million on a number eight, well, go and get a number eight. Do you know what I mean? Rather than bring Kai Havertz in and say, you can work this out. It might work. It will take time. It might work. And it might look
it's
like a masterstroke from Arteta.
The fee's not his fault.
The fee's not his fault. And playing him out of position is not really his fault. But when has that mattered? At the end of the day, if you're the player that's not... I don't think it's about a personal thing. I don't think it's people saying he's an idiot. I think it's people saying he's not playing well. And he's not. Really, is he? And that's, it might not be his fault, but that doesn't really matter to you as a football fan. You just want to see your club be successful. And if there's someone that could come in and do that job better than the player that's currently doing it, you're going to want that to happen. We said the same about Man United with Martial. You want a replacement for Martial, but if you can say it's not his fault he's had injuries. It doesn't matter. He's not cutting the mustard right now.
He's had plenty of chance. And I think with Havertz, I feel like he's a victim of his own versatility in some ways. And I feel like that's something that's not enabled him to nail down a particular position and excel at it.
But I wonder if he's as versatile as we think he is, or if it's just that he's been put in different positions. I think it's similar to Mason Mount, to be that versatile. Weirdly.
Yeah.
I think we're looking at the same sort of situation with Mason Mount, where realistically he should be playing as a number 10 or in a wide attacking position. But United are going to drop him into an eight and kind of force him to play there, when Bruno will occupy the spaces that Mount wants to occupy. So Mount will get a lot of attention from you. And he was, before his injury, getting attention for not really performing to the standard that United wanted him to. It feels like both of those signings actually might have gone to the wrong club for both of those players. I'm not really sure where they do fit right now.
Yeah, it's an odd one. That's all we've got time for this week's pod. Thank you for jumping on, mate. And Dave's not with us, as you probably noticed. He's on his honeymoon. So congratulations to him. Enjoy the sunshine with your new wife. But while I'm here, call to arms, get onto YouTube, wherever you listen to this, jump onto there. Give us a like and subscribe on YouTube as well. That's where we will want to see real growth as a channel. And it'd be really great to see some growth and support from you guys there. But in the meantime, thank you, Miles. And we'll speak next week.
Anytime.
See you soon.
Nice one.